push the buttons. Let's get started here. Good afternoon. Good morning. It's just after 10 a.m. It's Wednesday, April 4th, 2007. This is the North Dakota Public Service Commission. I'm Commissioner Susan Wiefald. And the commission is meeting today in the commission hearing room, State Capitol, 12th floor. And with me today are Commissioners Kramer and Clark. And I'll first call on Commissioner Kramer to see if he has any opening comments.
Just good morning and welcome.
Commissioner Clark.
Good morning.
And if that is done with, then I'll ask for a motion for the consent agenda.
I move passage of the items in the consent agenda.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. All right. And then we'll go to the items in my portfolio, SW1. I move the commission adopt the order denying the proposed wind source tariff rider filed by Northern States Power Company, DBA Xcel Energy, case number PU06439.
Second.
Now, on October 10th of 2006, Northern States Power Company filed a new rate schedule rider entitled Wind Source to its North Dakota Electric Service tariff. And Wind Source would provide an option for customers to voluntarily pay a higher rate for wind energy. And customers choosing to participate could either subscribe to 100 kilowatt-hour blocks of wind energy or subscribe to all of their monthly usage. The commission suspended NSP's filing on October 25th of 2006. And then on January 24th, 2007, the commission discussed NSP's wind source proposal with NSP, commission staff, and interested members of the public at an informal hearing. And we had quite a good, we had quite a number of interested members of the public participate in this, and there were people there from Fargo and from the Red River Valley, as well as from people who are closer to Bismarck. Concerns were raised that NSP's proposed wind source price adder was much higher than price adders charged by other utilities offering similar programs. And the primary concern was that the high price adder would discourage wind development because it would result in a false impression that wind energy is much more expensive than electric energy from other generating sources. Our staff recommended modifications as a result of that hearing and their own analysis of the tariff. Those recommendations were sent to NSP. NSP did not accept any of those, voluntarily accept any of the suggestions that staff had made in their filing. On February 21st, 2007, NSP filed a response explaining its proposed wind source rate design. And they did offer to hold subscriptions. That means they would hold the money that people would pay into the program until enough subscriptions were received to fund a new turbine. One of the issues in this case was that NSP proposed to charge people costs for new generation, new wind generation, while dedicating existing wind generation at Velva to this project. And the commission did not feel that that was a good match. So therefore, at the present time, we are moving to, we are adopting this order today. I move the commission adopt the order denying this proposed wind source tariff rider. And this would mean that there would not be a wind source rider for North Dakota customers here in our state. It would be available in Minnesota and other places, but we just did not feel that the numbers were right at this time. For example, NSP proposed to charge $2.50 per 100 kilowatt hours to North Dakota residents, while Xcel has just accepted a, the state of Colorado, they have adopted in a settlement a price of 9 cents per 100 kilowatt hours. That's a significant difference, $2.50 per 100 kilowatts to North Dakota customers, and they've accepted a price of 9 cents per 100 kilowatt hours in the state of Colorado. Things just did not seem to look right in this particular filing at this time. I think the only disadvantage to North Dakota customers would be if someone in the state wished to purchase all of their energy from wind energy, and they would have had the opportunity to do this under a wind tariff. Without us having a wind tariff in North Dakota, they will not be able to do that. However, we're all aware that Xcel Energy, NSP, is purchasing more and more wind to fulfill the energy needs of their customers these days. And so it isn't as if Xcel Energy is ignoring wind power and is not moving forward with purchasing wind.
I came around about 180 degrees on this from when it was first proposed. And when it was first proposed, I thought, gosh, if someone wants to pay more to make a, you know, whatever, environmental statement, political statement, they happen to like wind and want to support the development of maybe one more tower in North Dakota, then who am I to stand in the middle of that? But I, in significant part because of the testimony that the commission received from the public, I changed my opinion on it. I am going to be also voting to deny the tariff. It seems to me that this is one of those tariffs that perhaps 5 or 10 years ago may have made sense. And we had a number of utilities in about that time frame come on with these sort of green tariffs. The reason that it doesn't seem to make sense to me today is wind is mainstream. Wind is going to be, is now, and will be in the future, a part of everyone's generation profile, everyone's generation portfolio. The problem with this tariff is it treats wind as if it's some sort of boutique fuel that's set aside from the rest of the generation grid, and it sends the message that it's more expensive than bringing online than any other form of power. It's not necessarily. We don't know exactly what the cost, although we're getting into it in some other cases, of bringing on, say, new baseload coal are, baseload nuclear, baseload hydro. The problem is this sets aside wind and says, you know, here's the cost for bringing on new wind, and then asks people to pay for that when it may not be an accurate representation of both the benefits and negatives of wind. Wind makes sense as part of the portfolio. It doesn't make sense on its own because it's an intermittent resource. It's a resource when blended into a portfolio where you have potentially gas peaker units, things like that to back it up. It can be an economical thing because it can kick off high-cost sources of power like natural gas. Look, in this next motion on our agenda, we're going to be approving a 160, or at least the initial stages of a deemed complete, an application for 160 megawatts of wind, which is a major wind project. What's driving that is not a separate little tariff that treats wind as a boutique fuel. What's driving it is that it's going to be integrated into a whole system, and it seems to me in the future that's going to be where wind is at, not in these separate little alternative tariffs.
Well, I, too, came around. I don't know if it was 180 degrees, but, you know, my initial read on the topic was that if, you know, the voluntary nature of it makes it seem plausible or feasible at first. However, I, too, was swayed by some of the testimony. But I've been swayed by Xcel Energy itself. I mean, this is a company that brags about the fact it's the number one wind purchaser in the country. It brags about the fact that it intends to have 4,000 megawatts of wind energy in the next few years. It brags about the fact that wind is not only a new source or a boutique, as Commissioner Clark says, a source of energy, but even an economical one. And all of that seems to fly counter to it. To this very proposal, and so I think that if we applaud Xcel's commitment to wind development, we applaud their commitment to the environment. Personally, I'd like to see them make an even greater commitment to developing wind here in North Dakota, not just because I'm a North Dakotan and a North Dakota official that likes to see development done in North Dakota, but because as a regulator, we all know that one of our main obligations is to ensure that customers are not overpaying and that the least expensive source of electricity is the source that these companies are pursuing and building. And the fact of the matter is we all know that North Dakota is the number one wind resource in the country. So I think that given all of the facts, North Dakota is a great place to develop wind energy, and we look forward to a lot more of it in the future from all of our corporate citizens, including Xcel.
As one person said during the hearing that the commission had, why should people who really support wind have to pay significantly more for that resource than others?
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Aye. All right. SW2, I move the commission deem the application complete and issue a notice of filing and a notice of hearing in Langdon Wynn LLC's application for a certificate of site compatibility to construct a proposed 160-megawatt wind farm in Cavalier County, North Dakota, case number PU0726.
Second.
Well, we don't have the date yet for you for this hearing. We'll be setting that at our administrative meeting today, and you'll have to we'll have to get back in touch with you about that. However, on March 21st, 2007, Langdon Wind filed an application for a certificate of site compatibility authorizing construction of a 159-megawatt Langdon Wind Energy Center consisting up to 106 wind turbine generators and associated facilities in Cavalier County, North Dakota, as shown on the attached map. And what we're doing today is, and this is significant, is the commission finds Langdon Wind application is complete. This is the application that was filed with the commission. It has a lot of information in it. There's certain information that is required to be in an application by state law. Jerry Lean of our staff has done an analysis of whether it meets the requirements, and Bill Binnick of what is required by state law. And they have said, yes, it does, and they've given that information to the commission. So at this time, we are deeming the application complete, which means that we can move on to the next steps, which are to set a hearing. And the commission will be discussing the hearing date at its admin meeting. There's three issues that are going to be considered at the public hearing. Will the location, construction, and operation of the proposed facilities produce minimal adverse effects on the environment and upon the welfare of the citizens of North Dakota? Are the proposed facilities compatible with the environmental preservation and the efficient use of resources? And will the proposed facility locations minimize adverse human and environmental impact while ensuring continuing system reliability and integrity and ensuring that energy needs are met and fulfilled in an orderly and timely fashion? We are anticipating that this hearing will be sometime in May. This is the time for people who live in the location of the Langdon Wind Farm and even others around the state who have an interest in this project but have questions or comments for the commission. Now is the time for them to be contacting the commission. It is so much easier for the commission to take into consideration people's concerns now than it is at the time of the hearing. It's not impossible at the time of the hearing, but it's just easier earlier in the process. So I would encourage people to get in touch with us now and to find out more about the project and get any information they need from either commissioners or from the staff.
It'll be a large undertaking for the commission. If you look at the map that was submitted by the applicant, this is a large area of North Dakota. We're talking about a wind farm that's proposed to cover about 12-mile by 7-mile block of land. And putting that in perspective, as I thought about it, that would cover most, if not all, of the Fargo-Moorhead metro area. It's a large wind project, not just in North Dakota, but I mean nationally speaking, this would be considered a significant project as well. So it'll be a good amount of work on the staff's part, and look forward to hearing from parties in the public.
It actually covers 47.5 square miles and 30,400 acres.
Mm-hmm. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Okay, SW3. I move the commission approve Montana Dakota Utility Company's annual margin sharing adjustment, case number PU07114.
Second.
Now, this is a significant item on our agenda today. Each year since 2005, the commission has approved an annual margin sharing adjustment on electricity for MDU. MDU has requested to change its off-system sales margin sharing adjustment. The order requires MDU to share its off-system sales margins with customers, 85% going to customers and 15% going to MDU. You remember that in the case that was mentioned, the one in 293-9903-296, there was an issue about whether ratepayers, how MDU's off-system sales should be treated. And there was this settlement that was arrived that 85% of its off-system sales margins, the profits that MDU makes from off-system sales, 85% going to customers, 15% to MDU. That's over a certain level of off-system sales that have to be accrued. So if MDU makes more than a certain amount of money, they have to share it 85% with customers and 15% going to MDU. But if they don't make that base amount that's needed, then customers need to make up that base amount of that's needed of wholesale sales. All right, MDU's current rate structure assumes that North Dakota's ratepayer share of those margins is $6.5 million per year. However, off-system sales margins fell short of that base amount by a little over $1 million during 2006. So while last year MDU had an overage, and so they needed to share some of those off-system margins with customers, this year there's a shortfall. So while last year customers received a credit of 15 cents per kilowatt hour throughout the year on their bills, this year MDU customers are going to be charged 0.07 cents per kilowatt hour to make up that difference. And so you can see there's a difference between customers getting a credit of 15 cents per kilowatt hour. Now they're going to have be billed 7 cents per kilowatt hour. That's a difference of 0.22 cents. I want to make sure that 0.22 is in there.
Yes.
0.22 cents per kilowatt hour. And so the electric bill for an average MDU residential customer consuming 750 kilowatt hours per month will increase $1.65. Now, this does not make, this is not an easy thing to explain for a soundbite. That's why I gave everyone in the room a copy of this. And I also invited Mike Diller to be here in case later on there's additional questions about this. But one point is that since the inception of this Rate 57, since April 1st of 2005, MDU has been required to credit customers for off-system sales margins $2,728,785. The surcharge ordered in this case will result in recoveries from ratepayers of approximately $1 million. At this point, we're still ahead of the game by setting this up. However, we are going to be watching it carefully this year because during this year, Basin Electric Power Company used to provide 66.6 megawatts of baseload energy to MDU from their Antelope Valley station, and that contract expired on October 31st, 2006, thereby reducing MDU's ability to make off-system sales. So we'll be watching this carefully this year, and perhaps we'll be addressing it again before a whole year goes by.
One of the things to keep in mind is that customers still continue to get 85% of MDU's off-system sales. What this is a reflection of is we've built a certain amount of that credit into base rates. So what has happened is people's base rates are actually kept artificially lower than you would otherwise pay. If you didn't have this system at all, what you'd have is people paying higher base rates. Now, what's happened in the last few years is people have had it doubly good. I mean, not only have their base rates been kept low, but they've also been able to benefit, you know, even more from the fact that MDU was getting way above the target. Here, this recovery mechanism, customers are still getting 85% of MDU's off-system sales. It's just that target amount wasn't met in this last year.
Does reflect the tightening market, however, and illustrates the need for more baseload for lots of companies.
Yes, we're not changing the basic rules, but there's no portion of that to share with customers this year. So they're not getting 85% of anything this year. They're actually paying to bring up the base amount to where it should be.
I think the 85% is, I mean, they. We can have Mike talk about it a little later, but as I understand it, 85% is, we always get 85%. It's just there's a target amount, and at a certain point, then a tariff comes on to adjust for that.
Okay. Anyway, all right?
All in favor.
Aye.
SW4. Okay. These are our fuel cost adjustments, and to announce where they're going to be in the month of April. For Montana Dakota Utilities Company, as a result of this change, the electric bill for a typical MDU residential customer consuming 150 kilowatt hours per month will decrease 45 cents for bills rendered in the month of April. So their fuel cost is going down slightly. And, however, in their fuel cost this month is 2.5 cents per kilowatt hour. For Otter Tail, the fuel cost to Otter Tail customers is 3.46 per kilowatt hour. And the for an average customer consuming 750 kilowatt hours per month, their bill will increase $3.15 for bills rendered in the month of April. Their fuel cost is going up for Otter Tail. And for NSP, the cost of their fuel is 3.079 cents per kilowatt hour. Also, NSP's customers who use 750 kilowatt hours, their bill will increase by $3.45 for bills rendered in the month of April. MDU still has the lowest cost of fuel this month at 2.5 cents. And that ends the items in my portfolio. Commissioner Clark.
I think it's Commissioner Kramer's next on the
Oh, excuse me, Commissioner Kramer.
KC1, I move the commission adopt the first supplemental order granting the pipeline route near the abandoned mine in Section 4 of Farron Township, case number PU06330, Enbridge Pipelines, North Dakota, LLC's 10-inch crude petroleum pipeline in Williams, North Dakota.
Second.
You may recall that last year, I guess last October, we issued the order on the 52-mile new pipeline that from Trenton Lodge to Beaver Lodge, or Trenton Station to Beaver Lodge Station, up in Williams County. At that time, it was revealed that there is an abandoned mine somewhere in the area. We weren't sure exactly where or the proximity is related directly to the pipeline. But so as a result, our order asked for two things from Enbridge. One is that they do some further testing to determine if the construction or operation of the pipeline would be affected by the abandoned mine land. And secondly, that the SHPO would be consulted with regard to any cultural or historic resources affiliated with that site as well. Enbridge has provided a report that indicates that the route will not be affected by the abandoned mine, and that, in fact, the SHPO also signed off on that there are no significant cultural or historical resources that would be affected by it in that particular area. So this supplemental order just confirms that.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. KC2, I move the commission approve Northern States Power Company's cost of gas adjustment for April 2007, case number PU07124.
Second.
This is a decrease in NSP's cost of gas adjustment by $1.46.71 per decatherm that will be applied to gas used by residential customers on and after April 1. That changes the residential customer cost of gas adjustment from $8.92 per decatherm to $7.45 per decatherm, and will affect the typical April residential customer by lowering the cost of gas in the bill by about $8.51 compared to March, and it will be about $1.13 higher than April of last year.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
That ends items in my portfolio.
Okay, Commissioner Clark.
TC1, I move the commission issue a notice of intent to close proceeding and request for comments in its review of the intra-LATA switched access filings case number PU41889940 et al.
Second.
You'll notice by the case number here, 41899, it was a case from 1999. So this has been open for a while. It stems from the access dispute between Quest and a number of rural carriers that you'll remember from about that time. Part of the stipulation that the commission approved had the commission review rates of certain rural companies, their interstate access rates. We are proposing to close those cases, but requesting comments first from before doing so. The comments are due May 4th.
Actually, this is a major access charge case for these telephone companies in the state of North Dakota on interstate access. It's a very important issue. I've been very disappointed that the commission put together a whole list of issues back in August of of 2003. These were excellent issues. We spent quite a bit of time analyzing these issues. And then we put it out for the companies to set a hearing, and we appointed a hearing administrative law judge, and he held a pre-hearing conference, and he determined to indefinitely postpone, you know, to provide parties an opportunity to consider whether the matters that the commission had listed in its notice of pre-hearing conference could be resolved by agreement of the parties. Nothing happened. Then he had also said that if the ALJ ordered that if the parties are unable to agree for the resolution of these matters, they should attempt to agree to a specification of the issues. Absolutely nothing happened for 3 years on these, or more, since 2003. Now it's 2007 on these issues. So in my mind, it's very disappointing that no one took any action, no one did anything about interstate access charges. They've just let it sit. And this is not necessarily good for our either our companies or for the customers in the state who I'm concerned about. And so I'll be very interested in the comments that come back and to determine what the commission wishes to do next on this. In my mind, it might be appropriate to set this matter for hearing. If these companies could not come to agreement on these issues, well, then maybe the commission should still move forward and address these issues and just set the hearing date and go forward.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. TC2, I move the commission acknowledge its response to NuStar numbering pooling services at Level 3 Communications, North Dakota, will return a block of numbers assigned in the Jamestown, North Dakota 251, calling prefix case number PU05492.
Second.
This is just acknowledging a staff memo to NuStar, which is the numbering administrator, under some of the newer aspects of that the commission has been involved with lately.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. TC3, I move the commission acknowledge Level 3 Communications, LLC, notice of withdrawal of its petition for arbitration with Quest Corporation, case number PU0645.
Second.
This has actually been a disputed issue. Level 3 had filed for arbitration under the Federal Act, and this had been proceeding with the assistance of a arbitrator. And at a certain point after the issues had been at least identified, Level 3 filed for a withdrawal of their interconnection arbitration application. Quest had fought that and had argued that Level 3 was unable to withdraw its application at this point under the Federal Act, and there's been some briefs that have been filed to that effect. Commission legal counsel and staff, however, have both recommended that they don't see any reason why Level 3 would be unable to withdraw its application. They have a number of options that they can take from this point, whether it be filing for a separate interconnection agreement, simply accepting the current interconnection template, which is out there, or a number of other options. But we didn't see that one party could compel another to arbitrate when after they wish to withdraw. Quest, if it wishes to force an arbitration, there are ways to do that. So they still have legal options available to them.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Aye. TC4, I move the commission issue an order in case number GE07118, granting the request of Maple River Grain and Agronomy LLC, Castleton, North Dakota, to modify the business hours at its public warehouse in Chaffee, North Dakota, on a permanent basis. The facility will be open full-time from October 1 through October 21st and on an as-needed basis by appointment only for the remainder of the year.
Second.
This is just something required under statute.
All in favor?
Aye. TC5, I move the commission issue an order in case number GE07119 granting the request of Woodworth Farmers Grain Company to discontinue business at Buchanan, North Dakota.
Second.
This is the result of a request to discontinue business received from Woodworth Farmers Grain Elevator. There is no grain at the Buchanan facility and no outstanding storage applications or obligations.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. TC6, I move the commission issue an order in case number GE07121 granting the request of City Elevator, Inc. to temporarily close its Williston, North Dakota warehouse until further notice.
Second.
This is, again, a result of a request from City Elevator, Inc. of Williston The facility is empty except for some company-owned grain. The owner said he may sell the facility, reopen it in the fall if there's a crop, or use it for his own personal grain storage.
There's a whole bunch of these today.
Yeah.
All in favor?
Aye. TC7, I move the commission issue an order in case number GE07122, granting the request of Golden Plains Ag to discontinue business at Crosby and Noonan, North Dakota.
Second.
Golden Plains Ag merged into the Farmers Elevator of Fortuna, who's then changed its name to New Century Ag. These facilities will be licensed by New Century Ag. Golden Plains Ag has no outstanding storage obligations.
And the next one will take care of putting New Century Ag back in business.
Exactly.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. TC8, I move the commission issue an order in case number GE07123, granting the request of New Century Ag Fortuna, North Dakota, to operate a 557,000-bushel grain warehouse at Crosby, North Dakota, and a 255,000-bushel grain warehouse at Noonan, North Dakota.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
That ends the items in my portfolio.
Thank you. That ends the items that are before the commission at this time. The commission's informal hearing this afternoon has been canceled at 1:30. We do not have one at that time. At this time, we'll take questions. All right, you want to know the price that people are paying right now for their electricity?
Right.
All right, I think we would look at that, at the fuel costs that we had, plus it's not only the fuel cost, it's the distribution charges and everything.
Their rate right now is seasonal for residential, and as I'm recalling the numbers, it was roughly 5.3 cents wintertime and 6.3 cents summertime. Plus a fuel cost adjustment. Fuel cost adjustment is running what, about 1.6?
Maybe you can work with Jerry, and he could give you an estimate then of, with the $2.50, if a person bought 100 kilowatt hours for $2.50 above that, what difference that would make to their bill. Is that what your question is, Dale?
And you'd have to figure. It gets a little bit complicated because for those folks on the regular tariff, they have to pay the fuel cost. For folks on a wind tariff, that gets deducted, so it can fluctuate a little bit from
month
to
month. I'm just trying to figure out what is the premium they were asking for.
$2.50 per 100 kilowatt hours.
So it would be 2.5 cents per kilowatt hour or 250 per 100 kilowatt hour.
Mm-hmm.
So
that's the premium. That's the premium.
That's the premium.
Okay. Right, on top of the other.
Mm-hmm.
So explain why in Colorado they would only charge 9 cents per kilowatt.
They explained that was a mistake. But that wasn't accurate.
No, they said that there were subsidies and other factors involved that made that different from North Dakota.
One of the potential problems with this tariff is you're buying at the wrong time in the market. What XL had proposed under it was to charge customers the full cost of bringing on power, new wind power today, not the historical cost or an average cost or anything like that. Well, what's happened is the cost to bring on any new source of power, whether it's coal, whether it's wind turbines, because of the cost
nuclear,
of steel,
whatever.
Whether it's the cost of fiberglass, all of those things, those construction costs have gone up dramatically in the last year or so because of factors nationally in the marketplace for wind power. The market's tightened, so it's a lot more expensive to bring on any new source of power, including wind. And what we'd be doing is we would be locking in customers' costs at the height of the market as opposed to the valley. For example, the Otter Tail tariff, which is a green tariff available to North Dakotans, was done a few years ago when it was a lot cheaper to bring on wind power.
I just wanted to just clarify one thing. The 2.5 cents is the premium. It isn't
yes.
The rate.
That's correct. That's the premium.
I'm looking at the Colorado Wind Source website. There the premium is basically $1.13 per 100 kilowatt hours.
No, it says they'll charge 9 cents per block of 100 kilowatt hours.
They explained at the hearing that was a mistake in a publication. I'm looking at the at the XL Energy wind source.
It's
less.
Half.
It's less, right.
Yes, that's right.
Right.
Less than half.
Once you figure in avoided costs and all that, it's $1.13 in Colorado.
I don't mean this to be like facetious, but does Northern States
state's power, so I wouldn't buy nuclear power.
You know, I had actually brought that up at the hearing. I said, you know, that's the problem with setting aside this as a boutique fuel. You would never have someone come to the commission and say, even though there may be a lot of coal miners here in the western part of the state who would love to, as a matter of course, support the coal industry, you'd never have a specific tariff saying, I want 100% of more. I want to buy 200 blocks of coal power or nuclear power or whatever. It's the problem with setting a source a specific fuel and then saying we're going to have this rate if you want to support this fuel source, while at the same time incorporating that very fuel source into the rest of your generation mix.
The reason I ask is because what if I'm a carbon dioxide emissions
lover?
Freak?
Yeah.
And I say, well, I like nuclear power because there's no carbon dioxide.
Mm-hmm. That's right. Mm-hmm.
Right.
You want that microbe low is what you want.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
No, you're exactly right. It illustrates kind of somewhat the absurdity of the whole idea.
I mean, is this... Where does this go from here? Are there more negotiations with the company?
No, at the present time, this ends this issue for the time period at this commission.
Unless they would have a new filing
that they wanted to file next month that they wanted us to consider for some reason, then, of course, we would take it up. But for this particular filing.
Or ask for a hearing.
Formal hearing.
Yes.
Real evidence.
The Langdon Wind Farm, the book that you held up, it says 106 turbines, and the little summary here says 107. Can you tell me which?
No, I can't tell you.
It's somewhere between 106 and 107.
We go by the book.
Mm-hmm. Can you just talk about when the hearing is held, what sort of issues will you be looking at in terms of siting issues?
Yes. We'll be looking at turbine locations. We'll be looking at the location of turbines in relationship to property lines, to residences. Perhaps noise will come up from turbines. We'll be looking at wildlife issues. We'll be looking at other environmental issues. Those are the types of issues that come up in a siting hearing.
It's really a cultural, environmental, and historic review of the impact of a generation project on an area.
A great deal, as a matter of fact, and it's not dissimilar to siting of pipelines or more probably analogous as transmission lines. You have similar structures, similar intrusion. What you clearly have a little more, perhaps a little more noise, a little more motion, perhaps a greater intrusion on the landscape. But and to be fair, a greater intrusion on the land itself, because by the time you pour the cement, the footings, and all of that, you know, there you do have to consider a lot of cultural, historic, environmental issues. But they're the same issues that you consider when siting a transmission line.
Do you have any idea how many landowners are going
I'll
to
bet
have
we do.
Wind towers on their property?
Well, we don't have I don't perhaps. Think we have that information in this document.
I just want to make sure I understand here. Customers have already gotten more than $2.7 million worth of credits.
Yes, that's correct.
From surplus power sales, and because of the underperformance of surplus power sales now, they're going to knock about $1 million off that benefit.
That's correct.
Okay. Is the current structure, 85 and 15, is that enough of an incentive for MDU to hustle?
Well, that was the major question at the time that order was established, but I think it's important to remember there is a threshold before the 85-15 kicks in as well. My personal view is that 15% is enough of an incentive, and that it's frankly designed for optimum benefit to the customer and to the company.
Mike, would you explain that threshold? I think that's the question that Tony and I were discussing. Up to this base amount, how is that determined?
Right now, in base rates, MDU has $6.5 million worth of profits figured in there. If MDU's off-system sales margins goes below $3.2 million as opposed to $6.5 million, then there is a penalty involved. They don't get full recovery.
And
beyond just making an additional 15% on it.
And just so I'm clear in my mind, the 5.5 or whatever it was. I can't remember the exact. But the what they targeted this year, which was 5-some million, I mean, what they actually came up with this year, there's already kind of an 85-15 calculation with regard to that, right? So the 85% made up the
5.5 million.
Okay.
But it was still less than
the target, which is built into rates.
Okay. Is that an issue when we talk about if and when Big Stone 2 comes online?
Well, this would be, right now, MDU is purchasing power, peak power from Xcel Energy, capacity energy, in order to make up what they didn't purchase from Basin. One of the reasons they have come before us is that they see it as more advantageous to them and not only to them but to their customers to build the new power plant, and that would not require them to have to go out onto the market to purchase that additional 60 megawatts and additional power that they need. They would be able to have that power generated by the new power plant.
Dave, I think all these issues are ripe for consideration as part of a larger rate case, because any of these new large baseload generation that come on will significantly restructure the economics of how these companies, how they do business. And so we'll be looking at that. I think one of the things which is fair game and something that I plan to ask of not just MDU but all of the electric companies as we get into this series of rate cases that I think we're all expecting is the timing of when the decision was made to bring on some of this new generation. One of the frustrating things for me has been, over these last few years, the cost of fuel, the market cost, have gone up dramatically. And you can see it in all those graphs that we see. And it's related to, at least in some part, not planning to bring on sources of generation when need for energy was expanding. So the question is, now we're in this building cycle at the time when everything costs a lot more, would it have been better to perhaps maybe 5 or 10 years before plan out a little bit so that we weren't in this position where extraordinary market costs were getting passed through on the fuel costs? That's the problem, that fuel costs are that's a market, that's a non-regulated cost. Question is, why did you wait so long to start this generation
and should the ratepayers pay for that delay? The other thing that crisis or that urgency created was that it resulted in a number of energy generation facilities that were faster and easier to put up, those being natural gas.
Gas peaking plants. They have been putting in gas peaking plants, MDU and other utilities.
Now, maybe there's a perfectly good explanation for it. I don't know, but it's a question that needs to be asked at these hearings.
Well, there's a logical explanation that we delayed because when we build, we can pass on the cost of our ratepayers anyway.
I don't know if they'll say that.
That'd be a bad answer.
I think that it's so easy as regulators or as anyone to guess in hindsight what should have been done. I think that companies try to make the best decisions given the market that they're in. At the time companies were putting in gas peaking plants, that seemed our commission approved gas peaking plants. I mean, they talked to us about that they're putting in gas peaking plants. And those seemed to make the most sense at that time because natural gas prices were very low. Those plants are very reasonable to build, and they were seemed like they were a very good investment at the time. It's awfully hard to project. If we could all project into the future and know what's going to happen, we wouldn't be sitting here. You wouldn't be sitting there. So I hesitate to say that all the decisions that have been made in the past were not good ones at the time.
Commissioner Kramer said something that I wanted to ask about. He said basically because of the situation that we find ourselves in with MDU, that this is a reason to build more baseload capacity.
Well, I didn't say it quite like that. What I did say is it is illustrative of the tightness of the market. I mean, not just the fact that MDU lost the AVS 66.6 megawatts, but the other thing that illustrates is the basin needs it. And so it's just, I think it's indicative of the fact that we do need some region needs additional baseload generation.
What I was leading up to is it a reason to build baseload capacity so you can sell it off system?
Well, you know what, dealing in a it does, but living in a state that is an exporter, obviously, and a generator, that is a consideration that we have that other places do not have. So, you know, we always have to kind of struggle to balance that development side with the regulatory side.
When does the margin sharing credit become a charge? You know,
I think it's April 1st. Okay, thank you very much.
Excuse me, one more. I noticed that in Minnesota, the regulators are banging on Otter Tail a little bit for the money that they're making on off-system sales.
The Attorney General is.
Yeah.
well, I think that's a significant.
Is there a issue here in North Dakota about whether or not Otter Tail customers in North Dakota should be benefiting from Otter Tail's off-system sales?
Actually, we looked at some of those issues when we did the investigation into the fuel cost adjustment for Otter Tail, and our staff wrote up a whole report, and that is going to be and that was reviewed by the commission in December. Other people also took a look at that report. We do have a case that's before the commission that's coming up, and large industrial users of Otter Tail Power have intervened in that fuel cost investigation. And they have asked for a hearing the end of May, and so some of those issues may be addressed then.
It's certainly something worth looking into, and it impacts a lot of areas. And we also, as Commissioner Weifold indicated, will be taking up all those kinds of questions, you know, potentially in this investigation, potentially in a rate case. It impacts a lot of areas because if you say, I mean, you can say a statement like, well, this should all be credited to the customers. Well, if you make a statement like that, then what you're really doing is you're integrating the kind of the free market side of the energy company with the regulated side. And this is a market, which means it could tank and you could lose a lot of money. Now, if you as a regulator or as a state have said that you want to take ownership of that marketing side, then you potentially are putting ratepayers at risk because they'll legally be bound to cover the losses as they are to gain from the profits. So there's that question. It gets into the whole ring fencing idea. How separate do you keep the utility operations from the kind of the marketing side? It's a very complex question. It's not a slam dunk issue either way. At the same time, you don't want ratepayers paying for this other unit of the company, which is leveraging their resources to make lots of money. So,
however, we did address it in the MDU case, and we addressed off-system sales with that, and that's the result that we have here before us today of how that's playing out. So,
that's kind of what I was getting at. Is there some kind of arrangement in the future, perhaps contemplated, to put this MDU template on?
Well,
we would need to have a rate case to discuss that with Otter Tail, but also I really think if you're interested in this issue, you should go back and look at the memo from staff to the commission on Otter Tail's, on their fuel cost investigation. I think that will address some of those issues.
Dale, I would caution that it's a little different than MDU in that when we were dealing with the MDU revenue sharing agreement, it was the result of MDU having excess capacity derived from its own generation that were built by ratepayers. Otter Tail's situation is a little bit different in that this is kind of a marketing wing that is dealing with power sales on the MISO market. I mean, that's how it's generating its revenue, is by sort of its knowledge of the market and enacting these transactions. So it's a little, I mean, it is a little different than owning your own assets.
Well, there are monitors who keep track of arbitrage activities.
They apparently have very skilled traders.
And we're not necessarily surprised by that because Otter Tail, as small as they are, have been really economic and engineering leaders in the whole MISO discussion and the market discussion. I suspect that those what the Assistant Attorney General in Minnesota called unconscionable profits probably won't last a long time, because although Otter Tail's folks were very good at it early on, a lot of other folks are getting very good at it now.
Anything else? All right. Thank you very much.